podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello, so now the end is near, so we face the final, etc, etc. God, what a cliche start to the pod that could have been, Anthony. But it was a dark and stormy night of late season podcast openings, eh? I'm not going to do it, I promise. But anyway, we're back for our penultimate podcast of the season. Those on Twitter will have seen the news already, but no Nick tonight. A little baby Marina was born on Monday. Hopeful to have him back for the final run out of the season next week. But nonetheless, so if you didn't know, baby and mum are doing very, very well. And Nick's obviously over the moon. But obviously, he can't be here tonight. Nonetheless, we are Who Got the Assist. Find me on Twitter at WCA_FPL. Nick, WCA_Nick. Anthony at FPL Stag. Also on Instagram, WCA.FPL. And Anthony, as you've heard, is here, raring to go for the last but one time this campaign.
Hello, Tom. Good to be back again for this final pod, the final rapid record pod after a game weekend as well of the season, which is nice for us and especially yourself with the editing. Pod today, of course, we're going to be looking at Game Week 38, no surprise there. And in doing so, we're going to embrace the uniqueness of Game Week 38 over the last few years and every year, really, because it is a kind of bizarre game week that exists within a vacuum in and of itself. So how are we going to look at that? We're just going to look at what happened in the Game Week 38s in the past. Points per game, goals per game, random results, historic results, random things that happened with people retiring and the like. It's a weird week, and we're going to have a look at that. And we'll also have some correspondence, as per usual, and listeners' questions and answers. First off, though, we're going to start with the Game Week reviews. We're going to throw the mini league in pretty early as well as the market forces.
Well, I think the game review this week again stays with you, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Yeah, I like throwing it to you just, you know, for the second where I can just pretend that it isn't me who had the shocker of a game week. But no, it's me who had the shocker. 40 points net. So that's a red arrow from, I kind of started the game week just under 29k. I will end it just outside 37k post subs, which is disappointing. What happened? Well, like everybody my captain failed, you know, unless you were mad enough to go for someone like Joe Willock, it was a bad week for the captaincy. So I had sat on that, and look, that's obviously going to taint your score a little bit. And then things just didn't go right for me. I had Mendy in goals, and because I was playing Mendy, I decided not to play Rudiger, so he was on my bench. So that was a 1 point goalkeeper instead of a 9 point defender. In the backs as well, I did have Michael Keane, who at least got 7 points. Mitchell, no more heroics from him this week, which was disappointing. And Alexander-Arnold's clean sheet was appreciated. I brought in Harrison on a hit as part of a kind of, it was just a roll the dice, hope for the best, see if something happens kind of transfer. Nothing happened. Guys, 3 points. Salah, as I mentioned, 3 multiplied by 2 is 6. I had Son. Spurs were very disappointing. And I also had Kane, who was also very disappointing along with his Spurs teammates. And it's just really frustrating at this point. And we were just discussing it there before we hit the record button, just how kind of it's getting a little silly at this part of the season where you don't know how to predict things. And Spurs, who had looked up for it in previous games, suddenly just really, really weren't at it, which was very annoying. Saint-Maximin, I brought in a few weeks back or 2 weeks back. That's 2 game weeks in a row that Joe Willock has outscored him, which is a bit frustrating. He has the third and final week to try and justify his place in my team. Bruno Fernandes, like everybody, at least he somehow got an assist. The first no-touch assist that we've ever seen in FPL. Look forward to seeing that over the next few years. Kane, I mentioned. Cavani, I brought in, which was nice. I brought him in for Ings, so that was a nice swing in my favour as well, with his certainly not offside goal. 9 points there. So yeah, that was it in total. 40 points net. Disappointing, but it's okay. We move on. I guess, having been talking about hoping to get into the top 10k for multiple weeks, now it's like, oh God, let's just not lose my top 50k rank.
Well, I did 52 minus 4, so 48. The big story for me was actually that I was taken in hook, line, and sinker by all of the Twitter rubbish surrounding the Man United lineup. So, you know, I saw a couple of accounts, and seriously, you know, don't do this ever. I saw a couple of accounts saying Greenwood wasn't going to play, and it's going to be Pogba, Fernandes, and Rashford behind Cavani. So I thought, oh God, Grimm's not going to play. So I took a minus four, kind of 2 minutes before deadline to bring in Joe Willock. And I benched Greenwood. And obviously when I saw Greenwood was starting, I was like, oh no, I've totally made an error. And I completely got away with it, frankly. I think it's very hard to kind of foresee the 1-1 with Fulham. And obviously, Willock then went on and scored, which is actually ridiculous. And the only reason I got him in was because I wanted to get on the wagon after Adam Pritchard, who captained him this week. One of the people Adam Anthony spoke about there, captained into a 76-point haul this week as well. Ridiculous. But yeah, Willock with the 11-pointer, probably one of the highlights of this week. Elsewhere, you know, Dallas, Lingard with the assist, Mahrez with the assist. And Benteke, the legend continues, 4 goals and 4 for him. But you know, I was going to captain Mahrez, as I said in last week's pod. And then after a bit of thinking, I kind of went with a few people in the community, like Late Riser, for example, who I respect. He was one of the players who was saying, well, you know, Kane, you know, looks very hungry, as Anthony also mentioned. He was worth going with at home as well, in front of the fans, potentially the last game. So maybe we want to put on a performance and get a hat trick. And I thought, yeah, that really seems like very good reasoning. And obviously it didn't work out at all. Very hard to anticipate. They weren't going to bother showing up. But they didn't, frankly. So 52 means a little bit of a red arrow. I think it's about 1% red arrow. I mean, we probably come with no surprise to those listening that I have kind of mentally checked out of my FPL team, not the podcast, but my FPL team for a little while. And I think that kind of just puts it to bed, really. I think I'll probably just do something off the wall in terms of the captain this week coming for the final week, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. Anyway, in terms of, in contrast to me, those doing very, very well. Anthony, who's broken into the top 10? I heard it's a familiar name. Who's currently broken that glass ceiling?
Yes. There's a familiar name going to be there at number 8. But I guess starting off, it's Graeme Sessions, who didn't have a good week. Actually, had a worse week even than me. He only got 37 points. So dropping from 4th to 10th. So unfortunate there, Graeme. Hopefully you can bounce back up that leaderboard. In the final game week of the season, he has 2,513 points, which is still obviously a savage score and puts him like right up there with the top really in the world at the moment. Harry Jones is in 9th with his team Neville Wears Prada. He has 2,514 points and scored 52 this week. Flying in from 15th to 8th is none other than guest of only just a few weeks ago, Lucy Hynett, with her Sheung Believers team. She had 69 points this week, which was a solid result. And Lucy is indeed the GOAT, and she's flying her way up the ranks this season. And she's consistently up there, really, at the business end of the season. So fair play to her. In 6th is Jamie Timothy with his Asselexiao team. He had 55 points. David Izzat is up from 14th to that joint 6th spot. So he also has 2,523 points. He did that with 72 points, which is obviously a great score. In 5th, up from 6th, is Nikola Chantarevi, whose name was in Cyrillic, so I couldn't say it last week. But this week I had a look on Google Translate, and that's what it told me to say. So he has 2,524 points. In 4th down from 3rd is Ryan Hobbs, 49 points, 2,526. Up from 5th to 2nd, a joint 2nd indeed, is Hazik Zahim. He has 53 points this week, so 2,527. Beside him is Sean Dunlop, who had a tough week with 44 points, but still obviously retains 2nd place, albeit now joint. And up top for another consecutive week is Tim Franson with his team For Sammy. He only got 47 points this week, which was enough for him to hold on to the top spot. And he's 4 points ahead of the lads in 2nd with 2,531 points. It's Martinez, Dino with 8 points there, Diaz, Soufal with 2, Wan-Bissaka with 2. He put the captaincy armband on Son, so that was disappointing. 2 multiplied by 2. But in fairness, that's just like almost everyone's captain in the top 10. Like everyone captained someone who blanked this week, so that happens. He kept faith with Iheanacho and was rewarded with 6. He had Salah vice, that didn't go anywhere. He kept Lingard, still has Lingard, and that has worked out for him. 7 points there. He'd been pretty happy with that late goal for West Ham that gave him a few points. Greenwood 2, and Richarlison's 9 points, actually, proving pretty vital for him, actually. 47 points could have been an awful lot less if there weren't for a few unlikely heroes this week for him. So fair play to Tim. You're seeing why he has managed to keep a high rank all this season and has one right now.
Yeah, I thought of him when the Richarlison goal went in. So I noted him last week having had him in his team of DCL. And he got Nacho actually off the bench, Anthony, because Raheem Sterling didn't play against Brighton. So yeah, oh well, and good for Tim. And it looks like it's going to be a fairly close sort of tussle towards the top, but we'll see how it goes after everything kind of shakes out. And the market forces this week, we've literally just kind of finished again, but there have been quite a few reactions to what's been going on already. So Patrick Bamford, most bought in player in 31,000, and in 4th and 5th, Dallas 20,000 and Harrison 20,000. But Mo Salah being bought in by 24,000 and Chris TAA being bought in by 22,000. I mean, Trent got a clean sheet tonight and Salah only got three. I guess that, Anthony, is because of that Palace game and obviously what Salah did to them and off the bench earlier on in the season. Maybe that's what's fueling it. People wanted to cover their in-backs in the final game week.
You know, I'd love to think that it's that and that people have given it that much thought, but just given that these are early transfers and full time is only just blown the Liverpool match, I think these are people who are actually bringing them in, hoping to get points for them playing against Burnley, to be perfectly honest with you, Tom. But anyway, they've got them in anyway, ahead of the Palace game in 38 as well. And that's not exactly bad transfers at all, you'd think anyway, that Liverpool obviously have an awful lot to play for in that final game with Champions League football very much in their own hands at this point, just a result there, a victory there. And they will be in the Champions League after it looked very unlikely a few weeks back. So you can understand why people are just basically buying into one of the few teams that actually have something to play for left so this season. Then if you look at the transfers out, it's a little bit more interesting, I guess, than the transfers in, which are a little bit spaced out so far. But in truth, an awful lot of them are kind of transfers that people had to make. So an awful lot more Jota sales. He's being sold by 37K teams as it stands. Only Cancelo has more sales than him. And like you can understand why Cancelo has an awful lot of sales, considering he is now suspended for the rest of the season. The likes of Calvert-Lewin, Gundogan, and a few kind of random eclectic mix of kind of Watkins and Kane and stuff being sold there. But there's nothing really to tell from the rest of the names that are being sold.
I'm sure it's going to change in loads of ways after tonight's action is taken stock of by the market. But yeah, certainly, I guess Jota's can continue to be sold. Definitely probably going to see some movements around the striker's slot. I'm guessing there's going to be a lack of patience with Calvert-Lewin, that's for sure. Interested to see that Watkins was in that sold kind of bracket. I'm sure that won't happen for too long. Right, let's move into the topic this week. And obviously, we can't avoid it. It is game week 38. It is that beautifully mythical being, the time when all games are on at once at 3 p.m. on Sunday, and you'll go through the drama together of what happens when final things get decided. However, this year, there's not much actually needs to be decided, unfortunately. Most of the key things have actually been locked in, which may up the lucky dip lottery factor of it all, with the fact that, you know, maybe motivation, as we'd have said in the past, has been something which is going to drive a team's performance, is kind of taken away. And it's all, as we've said a few times over the last couple of weeks, about class rather than perhaps form. And what we've done is we've had a look at kind of the past game week 38 in general, and just try to give a flavour of what they look like compared to like a normal benchmark game week. So, I mean, from 2014-15 to 2020-21, which is the last seven seasons, on game week 38, there are on average 32.6 goals scored, 20 home goals, and around 12.6 away goals, give or take, or clean sheets 4.1. I chatted to FPL Review, or John Tuisma, about a benchmark's display, how this differs from a normal season. We spoke about this last year as well. And last year, we came up with an average of 15.5 home goals and 12.5 away goals on an average game week. So about 28 goals per week, plus 5 clean sheets. That means that compared to normal game week 38, where you have 32.6 goals and, you know, your average sort of game week, there's a 16.4% uplift for goals on game week 38. So there are more goals on game week 38 historically than there are kind of in a normal game week. This is accompanied by a drop in kind of clean sheets. So normally you'd expect to see about 5 clean sheets per game week. That drops to 4.1 on game week 38. So a decrease of about 18%. But one anomaly, which is worth mentioning, is that home advantage was more or less halved during COVID. And last year, funnily enough, on the final game week, there were actually only 28 goals on that final game week, which is the actual average of all the goals that we've seen normally during the course of the season. So last year's game week 38 was probably one of the lowest scoring end game weeks that we've ever seen. However, there are fans in the stadium for this game week 38, and it is hoped that we'll see a resurgence of that sort of home advantage. So broadly, I'd hope, Anthony, that we're expecting to see a high scoring game week 38 again.
Yeah, I think you can probably say that you'd expect that, in that, you know, pretty much most of the last few seasons, or almost all of the last few seasons, we've seen more goals per game on average in Game Week 38 versus the rest of the game weeks combined. And I guess it's worth reminiscing on some of the mad results that we've seen in Game Week 38 in the last few years to kind of dwell on what is possible. So even in 2020, when things were, you know, a little bit down for usual, we still had a Man City absolutely smashing the relegated Norwich team 5-0. With KDB notching up a brace, which was a pretty big result at the time for people who had him in their sides. Do you have any other 2020 ones, Tom, that you'd like to throw in?
Yeah, I mean, one of the ones actually that comes to mind is because of what was going on with young Jesse Lingard this year. Last year, he scored his first goal of the season, actually, on Game Week 38. In the 99th minute, I think he got basically the last goal of the Premier League the Premier League season last year versus Leicester in a 2-0 victory, which featured a Bruno pen, of course. Other notable things last season, a heavily rotated Liverpool. So no Trent, no Salah. Rumours which caught wildfire throughout the FPL community at the last minute, big button just a minute, all those sort of like deadline day things. They beat Newcastle 3-1 and Spurs drew 1-1 away to Palace, of kind of things that I remember from last year. But yeah, that Kevin De Bruyne brace was the one that kind of I do remember, just because I captained Jesus, who scored the first goal. I thought, yeah, I'm well on my way to massive fall here. And then KDB took over and I was like, oh, I should have just gone with the obvious.
Yeah, 2019 then was a little bit more fruitful, when there was an average of 3.6 goals per game that particular weekend. There was a City win, as we're kind of going to see an awful lot of with this Game Week 38 reminiscing. They beat Brighton 4-1. There was no kind of standout goal scorer there, but, you know, plenty of the big names that you'd want to have in your team returned that day. Crystal Palace beat Bournemouth and scored 5 times, with Nisi Batshuayi scoring twice, and Bournemouth even scored 3 times. So there was an awful lot of value to be found in that, in both of those teams on that day. And West Ham beat Watford 4-1 with Mark Noble scoring twice. So those were kind of three of the really high scoring fixtures that particular year.
And don't forget, Anthony, Cardiff seeing of Man United 2-0 at Old Trafford, Nathaniel Mendes-Lang making himself a Bluebirds legend with a penalty and also a random goal in the second half. So a brace for him. One of those you're like, oh, you can never see that coming. 17-18, just move us on there. I think that was one of the kind of archetypal years where you just saw random stuff happening on the last game week. Be it the... Do you remember the Ayoze Perez zone?
Yeah. Oh, no, it's coming into the pod later on.
Yeah, okay, no. But just to give you a taste of that, he scored a brace for Rafa Benitez's Newcastle when they beat Chelsea 3-0 at St James's. And that year, I think, I mean, I kind of feel like, you know, the 5-3 Bournemouth Palace result is kind of forgotten, but one which is remembered very keenly is the Spurs 5-4 with Leicester that year. And that was Mahrez's final game at the club, and Vares combined for one final time on kind of the Foxes side. On the other side, Harry Kane and Eric Lamella, oddly enough, braced for Spurs. And there were 31 goals that year in Game Week 38 versus a match they averaged of 26.8.
And then in 2017, I think, is the best of them that we've seen in recent years. And that was a year where there was an average of 3.7 goals per game. So that's pretty decent going. Man City, of course, 5-0 against Watford. Aguero scoring twice. Spurs beat Hull 7-1. Kane with a hat-trick there. And also Chelsea beat Sunderland, who were also relegated at that point, soon to test their fans that claim they were Sunderland till I die's claims to the limit, really, in the next few years. But anyway, yeah, Chelsea beat them 5-1, Batshuayi scoring twice there as well. So Michy Batshuayi twice featuring in this.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're going to be kind of sat there kind of saying, oh, bye Michy Batshuayi, but there's certainly been all manner of results on the final day. And I think perhaps that kind of shows the fact that you do get these results which come out of nowhere. You can't really pinpoint exactly the game where it's all going to go off, and you can't always pinpoint the players. So, you know, 16-17, Man United that were at home to Crystal Palace, and Josh Harrop scored in his debut for United as they beat them 2-0. On those players who wasn't even in the game at the time, and you had like goals scored by assisted by someone who was in the game. And a really nice segue here onto kind of FPL specific stuff is obviously Praz FPL's question, which is a question for the main sort of Q&A session, but really works in well here. He asks, you know, this is going to be popular, so I'll ask, your top five players to target who are low owned but capable of that 15 pointer for that last minute boost in mini leagues and rank. And, you know, the games that we've mentioned and the outcomes we've mentioned, the fact that the final game week is a high scorer, means that if you do kind of get your lottery ticket right, you could do very, very well indeed. So what we've done is, yeah, there's lots of randomness on the final day. There's high variance in single game week. But we've picked up a few players who maybe could get you there, depending on what you're looking at in the market. Should we go one player each and kind of, I'm sure there's going to be one with, oh, no, you've got my notes here. I don't know. Do you want to do it by position, or just want to just do it for lols?
Let's go by position, sure.
Okay, all right.
Start with defenders. I hope you don't have this one. I have selected out of all players, and I just because I think he has a surety of starts that you wouldn't normally expect, Eric Garcia of Manchester City. He
what?
Came.
Okay, you know. Yeah, okay, this is game week 38. It's such a mind screw because you've got to think about these players as being viable options.
But Eric Garcia, bear with me though. City actually find themselves in a little bit of a shortage when it comes to right backs. So Kyle Walker is a doubt, and they're surely probably saving him for the Champions League final. And obviously, João Cancelo, after his red card, is suspended for game week 38. And so, who better to select to replace him in the side than Eric Garcia, the man that Pep put on when Cancelo actually got sent off. So that's kind of basically as City's, you know, third choice right back, who almost never gets a chance to play, but has now played in the last two games when City needed a right back. I suspect he's also going to be the right back of choice because he's just not going to be in that Champions League final team. I'd have loved to have said Benjamin Mendy here, but City have options at left back, and he obviously could fit Praz's criteria a little bit better of potentially have a 15 pointer in him, just based on his kind of attacking verve and history. But I couldn't select him because I just couldn't be sure that he wouldn't just get 0 points.
I'm just not sure with them, like, that you can make that switch confidently. That's the thing. It's the X minutes thing, as you've acknowledged, and that's fair enough. Defender-wise, I've only got one, which is Craig Dawson. I will forever recommend this guy. I've got Schufal because you told me to buy him and it didn't go very well, Anthony, but I blame you completely for that. Dawson is just amazing value, really, 4.5 throughout the course of the season, yes. But if you're like, who do I get in who's likely to do a goal? Craig Dawson's had the most big chances, and he's 4 for XG per start for defenders over the course of the season. Their final game is Southampton at home, and he could be a candidate to grab that sort of vaunted 15 pointer. Just because if you watch them all kind of lining up from a Crespo delivery, Crespo's obviously another decent option here. It's always Dawson and Suchek either kind of following each other into the box or doing a split into the box. And I think that, you know, you just need the ball to go your way. You need them to keep clean sheet, but that 15 points is probably on if you do get lucky with Dawson. You could obviously go with Crespo as well. It's just that Dawson's likely to be scoring the goal. Crespo's likely to be assisting the goal. But yeah, I think he'd be the one I go for. Midfield-wise, I think I'm going to just jump in with Aubameyang. So there's huge variance on the final game week. There's bugger all, which I can tell you in the stats to commend him to you. But gut feel on him is that it's a day where he will go crazy. One thing on Aubameyang that I found during my kind of reviews of the last few years is that he's actually scored on 3 out of 3 of the last three game week 38 he's been involved with while he's been in England. And he's actually scored consecutive brace on the final days as well. A brace versus Burnley in 18-19, a brace versus Watford last year. Obviously, he was chasing the golden boot back then. But if anyone likes, you know, form for scoring goals on day X, then that's something to potentially bear in mind. I kind of vaguely fancy actually at home against Brighton, I'm not going to lie. So he would be one that I would kind of bring to people's attention. Well, there may be a couple of other options in the Arsenal team who I mentioned in a minute.
Yeah, and actually, I'm going to steal that one from you and say Nicola Pepe was one of mine that I had thrown in here.
Wasn't mine actually, funnily enough. No, you can have him.
Very good. Well, 7.6. He's obviously scored in 2 of his last 3 games with a brace against Palace. Just generally, his Premier League form hasn't been particularly good, and he's never actually managed to make himself an FPL, even slightly interesting from an FPL perspective. But he's been quite consistent for Arsenal in the Europa League, especially. A bit like Mkhitaryan used to be for Man United when things weren't necessarily going too well for him in the Premier League. So Nicola Pepe is my nomination here. Again, it's a bit like you said with Aubameyang. I can't really point to stats to commend him to you. I just kind of feel like he is the quintessential modern post-Wenger or, you know, post-Highbury Arsenal player who, when the pressure is off, tends to perform. And there he is.
Fair enough. I actually had an even bigger punt in the Arsenal lineup.
Martinelli.
Yeah, 4.9 it loaned. And he scored tonight. I was annoyed. I said that on the Slack. I was like, oh, God, I wish he'd stayed quiet. But he's home versus Brighton and didn't start tonight. So hopefully there's a chance he will start against Brighton.
What a guy.
Standing out because he's out of position, isn't he, for a top 10 club with analog metrics like shots in the box, midfielders doing very well, as well as having the superior XG per 90 over the last six games and the likes of Bruno and Son. He's also second for XA over the last six, level with Mane, and he's created the second most big chance as well for Arsenal. So again, another kind of small percentage player that you could be looking at. Wow, we've turned to massive Arsenal fans, haven't we? I don't know how that's happened.
It's great citing XG per 90 with Martinelli in the last six.
I know.
He's managed to make it past the 60-minute mark twice.
It is ridiculous, isn't it? Because you are just kind of effectively trying to build a case, and maybe this is like a case study in framing. We're trying to build a case for players who don't really play very much or for whatever reason are now punts. Like if you don't own them, they are going to be that way. And it's just trying to find something to commend them to you. Like with Aubameyang, for sure, I can kind of just, it's clearly just historic stuff. With Martinelli, it's kind of looking at the data on a particular filter, but it's up to you to make the reference and not you, Anthony, but up to you, listener, to understand, to think about whether that is actually relevant to you or something you're actually vaguely interested in. I think the actual big one that I would be looking at, and actually is reflective of my forward pick as well, is Sadio Mane. So, Jota, no worries. Like Mane's obviously no Salah, as we found out this year, but 11.7 and 6.8%. Could he be the differential to Rocky to the end? He's got form for final day heroics as well. He scored a brace versus Wolves a couple of years ago. He's fourth for XG amongst mids over the last six. Level with Greenwood, actually, who everyone's been lauding. That's per 90 as well, Anthony. You'll be pleased to hear. He's also fifth for shots in the box per 90 and actually is second for XA over the last six game weeks. So he's actually been creating chances as well. Had a terrible year, has Mane, but could he finish it with a flourish, Anthony?
He might, but I actually didn't select any Liverpool players in this for whatever reason. I just decided to just ignore them completely. And instead, I actually have looked at a guy who we talked about last week, and we'll skip through him quickly because there's a chance that he might not actually play. It's Kai Havertz that I had in here, 8.3. He hasn't played a huge amount recently because he's dealing with all sorts of injuries, but he will need to get game time ahead of the Champions League final, which you would expect him to start if he is at all ready to play. And so with that in mind, I'm kind of commending him here on the premise that you should probably pay attention to any sorts of press conferences that are given ahead of these games. That Villa game, I fancy him anyway to do something in if he manages to actually make it onto the pitch. Ferran Torres, I'll throw in again after the hat-trick versus Newcastle, which had followed itself a goal against Chelsea. He had a blank against Brighton, but he feels like an unlikely Champions League starter. And with that in mind, he feels like the type of player who could play. Add to that the fact that he's kind of occupying that false nine /striker role and has been doing it alongside Jesus or with Jesus on the pitch at times. And it seems like, unfortunately, and the man that we would have been talking about in the next, when we get onto the forwards, but we can't because it looks like he's going to be injured. Sergio Aguero won't be there to take what would have been Torres' place in the side. And so with that in mind, at 7.0, he feels worth that punt.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a question about Sergio Aguero, so I'm going to leave that until those questions. But I have one forward and it is Bobby Firmino, and I am very, very tempted to make the move for Dominic Calvert-Lewin to Firmino for that final game of the season. He's back in the top 10s for shots next year over the last 6 months forwards, 4.3% owned. So if Liverpool do go mental against Crystal Palace, could he be involved? Probably not, because he's annoying as hell to own if you own him during the regular season. But hey, on a one-week high-variance basis, he could be a player who's worth considering. I think actually, if I was to sit here and make a couple of recommendations just for, you know, some giggles on 1 week where it could all go wrong and it's all a bit of a lucky dip, it's all a bit of a lottery, I think my Aubameyang one and my Firmino one would be the ones that I'd be most likely to think about. If I was making a free hit, they definitely both be in, and probably they both be jostling for the armband for me, that's for sure. Anthony, what about you for the final pick?
Yeah, I have two former forwards that I'm going to commend, and I don't have any forward to commend whatsoever for this segment. And those former forwards, one of them is Marcus Rashford, who I feel just needs minutes. He's obviously had a little bit of injury trouble in the last few weeks, and he needs minutes ahead of the Europa League final, which you would expect him to start. So if at all possible, I suspect that Ole will start him away to Wolves. So with that in mind, look, it's as you say, Tom, high variance week. So you'd fancy him to get something, even if it's a very kind of much changed United side with the likes of Juan Mata feeding him rather than Bruno. And also because it is, you know, game week 30 something, and because he's done nothing so far, and because it is the Iosi Perez zone, I have to recommend Iosi Perez. Where did this come from? This has been something over multiple seasons where Iosi Perez always hit form in the final weeks of the season.
I can buy it.
And yet it hasn't happened this year, even though he's actually been playing. And so I just feel like surely the Iosi Perez zone will finally become clear, you know, as he opens a time portal, changes everything, somehow finds a way to either toss Chelsea aside or toss Liverpool aside from a great distance by scoring himself for Leicester against Spurs. It just feels so right, and yet so unlikely.
I can just imagine it happening. I think
just imagine.
Obviously, he did that huge sort of embarrassing miss that would have basically
the late miss. People
like, yeah, he's cost them the Champions League with that miss. No. The reality was that obviously there's been loads of other reasons why they may not get to Champions League. It doesn't just come down to that one moment. But the poor guy hopefully is going to be maybe motivated by that.
There's going to be a great team talk in Brendan Rodgers for him. Certainly, he's got he was into the office and he got one hell of a pep talk, you know, about everything he could do. If you move these boxes, it'll make a huge difference for the whole side, is what Brendan must have kind of said to him to psych him up for that Spurs game. And so, I believe in him anyway to do something. I'm not going to buy him in a million years, but I would laugh a lot if he actually does score against Spurs.
Cool. So quite a few recommendations there. The other thing to kind of think about is what I mentioned earlier about TAA and Salah last year. And obviously, this comes in the light of me absolutely losing my feces this game week and end up with getting very, very fortunate to not be punished for benching Greenwood and buying in Willock. Reminds for all the time of writing. I mean, it's more of a warning, really, because game week 38, if you're new to the scene, is a notorious time for pranksters and chain yankers, Cockney rhyming slang completely intended, to kind of get on and try to mess with your head and say, this guy's not playing, I've heard that. I think just mute anybody, even temporarily, that will lapse into this rubbish and try to take case or ask or our approach. But that said, as we saw with TAA and Salah last year, Anthony, sometimes there are leaks which are impossible to ignore, as I thought the Greenwood one actually this week was, but definitely last year with Salah and TAA that was being so widely reported, I just thought, right, I've got to do something about this. So I know it's a bit of a vexed concept. I'm not going to spend too long on it because obviously it's a bit chatty rather than actually quantifiable. But Anthony, like, what do you think you need to know to be kind of believing of a leak?
I think with all of these leaks that we get on Twitter in general, the first thing I try to do is to vet how good that person's leaks have been in the past. And that's obviously quite hard to do if it's someone who's leaking for the first time or says they have information for the first time. With them, I think I just take it as a pinch of salt unless I see something else. But when it comes to, if there's somebody like FPL Rockstar or something gives us some sort of indication, you know, in just about before the deadline, I would take that very seriously because he has shown multiple times that he has pretty good insider info. So I would just say be very, very careful more than anything. I would also say to pay a bit of attention to what journalists are saying in just regular replies to people on Twitter. And if you have a subscription to The Athletic, more and more we're seeing journalists actually answer questions from fans about who they think are going to play. And sometimes they have a little bit of an insight when there's something odd going on, especially. So, for example, a few game weeks ago when Scott Carson was playing, there were an awful lot of indications came through about that from sources you wouldn't expect it to come through from because it was so noteworthy. Likewise as well, actually, when Ole played the kids against Leicester for United, that info came through like loud and clear from all sorts of sources because it was just so unusual. And so those types of things, especially, I think you need to take serious when it's something that's almost scarcely believable. It oddly seems to be more believable than when it's just about believable. Then I feel like you have to be really doing your due diligence much more.
Yeah. So if you move everything which is impossible, then whatever remains, however improbable, is true. Sherlock Holmes. But yeah, maybe you're right. I think it's just that when everybody is, when it's this maelstrom of individuals trying to trap you in the trolling trap, I think that's when it becomes a bit more difficult. But I think you're right, Anthony. I think it's just about trying to make sure that you kind of look at the provenance of what's been said. Like if it is a random account who's writing random stuff, look at their account, what have they said, how much have they said things, what the comments beneath what they've said, and ask other people that you know, is this person worth trusting? Most of the time, actually, the answer is no. And as Anthony said, a lot of the time it is about the journalists. So, like, you know, like Sam Lee, who cover Man City, Jonathan Schrager, who covers Manchester United, and ex-WHU employee of West Ham. Individuals that, throughout the course of the season, provide decent insight into what's going on. Those are people to be continuing to keep an eye on as things kind of go. I guess something of the final thing, how do we expect the final game to go? I don't want a blow-by-blow, this game's going to be a 4-1. This is what's going to happen. I think just kind of a general sort of overview. So for me, I probably expect a bit of a reversion to the norm. Like FPL review, we spoke about it a little bit, actually. And your man said to me that he expected home advantage to go back to normal for matches with fans. He also said that one of the biggest home advantage things, if there are fans there, is influence over referees. So a lot of the conventional wisdom is kind of true about that kind of home advantage. It's just a matter of analysts beginning to quantify that reality. And so, yeah, after last year's fellow output, I'm hoping for a decent afternoon's viewing, that's for sure. And either way, I think that's a bit of a sappy point, but all matches at once will be simply epic. Like all of those kind of scores coming in, like there's going to be no, I've got to wait until 4 p.m. until the next game. It was all going to happen at once, like one big hit. And I really missed that about FPL. So it'd be really, really nice to have that. I do expect kind of in summary, there to be more goals this time round than last year. That's for sure. It's a bit of a boring final game, apart from the Man City game. And I'm expecting there to be a couple of surprises along the way. And I'm just going to be basically hoping and get lucky to get right.
Yeah, hilariously, I think what's really stood out for me about this game week also is the fact that all the kickoffs are at the same time. I've just not really liked the drawn out game weeks whatsoever that we've been entirely subjected to really through COVID. So that in particular actually is going to be very refreshing. I think I actually did decide to make a not exactly very earnest attempt at predicting all of the scores for this game week. And what I do see is that subconsciously I have expected high scoring games, and I also seem to be expecting home advantage to count hugely for the sides that are involved. I guess the most interesting of my random, not earnestly put together scores are Manchester City 5, Everton 2, Leeds 7, West Brom 1, and Fulham 2, Newcastle 3. There you go, Tom. You heard it here first.
Willock brace? Willock hat-trick? Is that how it's going to go?
No, I think Sam Maximan is finally going to do something from my side. No, it'll probably be something really frustrating, like Jacob Murphy or something coming on as a sub and getting a hat-trick.
Willis and go all the way. Right, Adam. Right, let's take a break there and move on to correspondence and Q&A for the last time this season, pretty much after this.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and it's time to get into the listener kind of stuff. And it's the final correspondence of this season. I've done my best. I've been hanging over it with a scythe. I've been trying to lop things off with a tiny penknife. But the reality is the correspondence it's kind of shambled towards the end of the season. I think it's going to make another year. But it is the final one of this year and this campaign. And it is a good friend of the pod who's been in touch, hasn't Anthony?
It is, yeah. The correspondence section has been and will continue to be your chance to give your addendums, get your questions in, to to deliver your theories, to give us some poems, to give us your thoughts, whatever it might be. And we've really enjoyed having them all this year to whogottheassist@gmail.com. We had correspondence in most pods so far throughout the season. We had to give it a bit of a rest when we had such tight turnovers a few times, but we got loads of emails in over the year and we've really enjoyed having them. And FPL Sizz wrote in with another bit of correspondence this week, and he has of course been part of the correspondence section before, so thanks very much for him for emailing before and indeed emailing again. And what Sizz said was this: "Morning lads, great 200 club pod." This is obviously from a few weeks back. "I heard the plea for material, and as the shelf life will be limited, I thought that a topic with some staying power may be of use." How right you were, Sizz, how right you were. "Listening to the declaration of Messi Lingard's downturn of form put me in a spin. He's a talisman. He's on penalties. He's got great fixtures," sprang from my mouth before I could think it through. Maybe Antonio's return has pushed Lingard back. Maybe other clubs have learned to stifle his creativity. And maybe he'll revert to his United norm. I flick open my FPL file of reflections to see if I can glean any insight on form and bandwagons. I realise I haven't delved into it for quite some time. And with the last mention being the Gundogan. The period since has been a steady trickle of green arrows. My efforts to convert form to consistency has paid off. So I wonder, lads, can we as FPL managers have form? Much love, FPL Sizz." Tom, can you as an FPL manager, and can other FPL managers have form?
I think so. I think you can definitely get form. Let's define terms, though, for those who are allergic to things like this. I think the use of that word to me means confidence in your decision making. And if you've had a few weeks, and I'm sure we've all been there as FPL managers, you get a few weeks where your transfers, your captaincies have come off, you know, and as a result of that, you're less likely to be second guessing yourself. You know, you're going to make those transfers. You're going to kind of make that captaincy decision without much worry, without much kind of, you know, fraught kind of thought process about what you're going to do. Whereas if you've had a few weeks in doldrums, I think you do often second guess and ask around for help a bit. And you bridle against people who say, go with your gut. Like, because you'll be like, well, I've got no idea what that is. You know, I've got so many options kind of going on in my head. And you lose that ability to be able to pinpoint exactly what you think is the best option. And I think that's a bit of a product, perhaps, of kind of being part of the kind of the social ecosystem of FPL a little bit, that you're kind of, you kind of lose it. Because there are so many good managers who say one thing, and you're kind of like, well, actually, I don't really agree, or I'm not really too sure. And it's definitely interesting to try to nail exactly where you sit. But I definitely see kind of the advice of better managers than me, such as Matthew Jones and Will Thomas, fans of Will Hub, that's where it really comes into play, because they'll always advocate just continue doing your own thing, not panicking, and you'll kind of even out in the end. Kind of there's a bit of a gambler's fallacy thing going on, a bit of a golden mean thing going on. But equally, you know, they've Will's done had an awful season last year doing the same thing, just kind of it didn't quite work out for him. You sometimes you do get lucky, sometimes you do get obscenely lucky, like me, Mitchell last week. But if you're able to ride with those punches, not get too off piste, then and stick to like a tried and tested method, then you tend to do okay. And that's what Matthew Jones done this year. Like started at, you know, 2.4 million or something, and he's kind of worked his way up to being a decent position. Basically, as a football analog, reminds me a lot of what Alan Shearer always says to a striker who's going for a dry spell. If anybody in the UK has been watching Match of the Day of the last kind of, you know, 10 years, he'll always go through the same sort of notable narrative. And he'll say, you know, keep doing what you're doing. I'm not going to do a Geordie accent, sorry, lads, and ladies and other people. And he says, you know, keep doing what you're doing and the ball comes to you and you'll get your chance to eventually score. And sure, Timo Werner, of course. But I think the reality is that you can be informed. You can kind of get to those sort of levels where you're happy and confident in your decision-making.
That was pretty interesting, Tom. I think what I think sticks out from your kind of discussion there is almost like the managers you describe, and I mean this in the kindest way possible, they stick to their strategy, which is effectively boring is good. You know, captain obvious, keep the transfers sensible, don't allow yourself to panic when things are going badly, and eventually it'll come good for you. And sometimes it doesn't when a season just doesn't go your way. That can just be the nature of these things. You are trying to predict the future every week, and you know that's inherently difficult. But at the same time, it will usually work out. There is a bit to this, though, about when you actually do hit a rich vein of form. And I think my own team, I hit a rich vein of form in kind of February, March, and into April this year. And I think then something happens where you maybe buy into your own hype just a little bit. And I've definitely seen this happen to me in previous years where I find, okay, I've been sensible. I've taken the odd little bit of a differential and it's gone right for me. And now it's time to supercharge my rank and chase points. And then suddenly things can fall apart quite quickly and you just start to stagnate, or in my case, just start to slip just a little bit. And so there is a hard line to run between, you know, making the most of having a hot hand, but also at the same time, not maybe believing it's that hot and trying to do, you know, backflip shots or something and finding that it isn't working out for you. But at the same time as well, there's a skill in being able to revert to boringness and not panic, but there's also a skill to not leave boringness when you think that boringness is, you know, just on, you know, it's doing well for you. It's investing and getting, you know, a 6% return and then being like, oh no, I can do something mad and get a 40% return if I do this. And then suddenly you've lost it all. And that's, I think, what can quite easily happen to you too. And so I definitely, to answer this question, think that FPL managers can have form. And indeed, FPL managers can have, you know, class as well. You know, there's, you know, class is permanent, you know, form can come and go. And I feel there are some people whose form doesn't necessarily sometimes match kind of the good, analytical, careful, sensible decision-making that they can have. But I think a bit like what we would say, you know, class is permanent and it will shine through. We see that year after year after year. And that's why you do see some FPL managers managing to get pretty consistent, let's say, top 10 and 5K ranks.
Absolutely. And that's why you do find people who do take that sort of cautious route and being able to kind of calmly reverse park into where they need to be every single time. Whereas you get others who do take a more aggressive route, like, for example, friend of the pod, Late Riser, Pranil, it sometimes doesn't quite work out. And that does happen some years. Like sometimes you do get unlucky earlier on. And it's just a case of trying to decide whether the cadence of the season has kind of dictated that you've not done very well, or whether it's something wrong with your managerial ability. For these guys, probably not. For me, 4 years on, yeah, it's something wrong with my managing, being in the quote-unquote public eye. Yeah, really interesting question there. Thanks, Sis.
Yeah, thanks so much, Sis. So that correspondence was sent on to whogottheassist@gmail.com. Now, we're at the point of the season where we won't be able to get any more correspondence in because there won't be any more game weeks to look ahead to. So if you are feeling like sending in some correspondence, it's got to be some pretty evergreen content that we'll be able to maybe toss into some of our preseason things. We'll do a little bit in preseason, or otherwise it's going to be something that you're looking at for game week one. So maybe just hang on with the correspondence until sometime in the summer, and maybe write it while you're just having a barbecue, sitting out in the garden and taking in the rays,
quiet beer.
Yeah, and that's when that moment should come and you're like, oh, that Irish kid who was pestering us to send emails to whogottheassist@gmail.com, now is my time to send that email. You know, push the dog away, just forget about the barbecue, let everything burn, and write that email.
Cool. All right, let's move on to listener questions proper. Adam Pritchard, who's not here to answer their own question this week for once, amazingly enough, asked this morning, before everything happened, choose your own adventure question. He said, you've either got to answer A, how grateful are you for the presence of Joseph Willock in your side, or B, will you forgive me? And obviously it's gone very, very well that he's scored, so is it 6 goals in 6 games? Like the heir to Lingard effectively, Joe Willock. But in general, Anthony, this hasn't really been the year to be jumping on pontiferous differentials, has it?
No, it hasn't. And I think this is something we've talked about this year. I think more than usual, when we're talking about just don't bet against the house. And that has proven true again and again and again. And so it hasn't necessarily been about a few players going through hot streaks. Instead, it's been about getting onto a very true, long-lasting bandwagon early. So you would think of Lingard in that. You think of, I can't believe we're saying it, you would actually put Willock into that category at this point, just about. You think of Gundogan when you say that as well. These were options that Watkins is another, actually, who when he finally started to come good and wasn't having everything barred and, you know, things going unlucky for him, it came good. A bandwagon that pretty much started off the season and never stopped going was Bamford. There were all these options there that you could have got on and enjoyed and stayed on rather than jumping around, punting. I think it usually was a fool's errand. And so I found that with quite a few of the punts that I took this year, I actually could not find a single punt outside of, let's say, my free hit team, where I could say that punt that I brought in for those 2 weeks worked. There was none. Martinelli, fail. Yep. Trossard was a fail. Ola Aina was a fail. Pascal Gross was a fail. Chris Wood was a fail. Alan Saint-Maximin for the last 2 weeks has been a fail. Harrison has been in for 1 week was a fail. And Ings, who came in for 1 week, was a fail. I've also had captaincy fails when I went a little bit deviating from the mean with Dominic Calvert-Lewin once or twice. Very much was like just strapped ourselves to concrete blocks and jumped in together. It was terrible on both occasions. And it just hasn't been a season for the pontiferous differentials, as you put it, Tom.
No, definitely not. No, imagine jumping on, you know, Richarlison, Dominic Calvert-Lewin early on. It's just not really been that kind of year, has it? And maybe that could be something that we could figure in next year. Obviously, it's very difficult kind of mid-season to recognise one of those seasons where everything goes the way of the house. But maybe if you are able to kind of get a sense of the material of what a season's going to be, you're able to maybe kind of adapt your play style accordingly. I think maybe this year it did kind of get to a point probably fairly early, actually. I think maybe the John Stones brace, like, it got to a point where you're kind of like, wow, like, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to get kind of beyond a certain point in the rankings. And you know, for every decent Herb captaincy I got this year as well, I've lost on things like, you know, captaining Vardy when Bruno was playing home v West Brom, you know, taking risks like that. And it has been a very difficult season, and in terms of just trying to kind of do something even vague differential, like every single time you've been punished, as far as I'm concerned, at least, I'm sure you can find a path that you can plot where you could have done okay. But it's very kind of few and far between to have been able to do that. And again, perhaps it underlines the importance of a good start, Anthony.
Yes, I think that has been the case, that a lot of the players that I would have named there, you know, the likes of Bamford, the likes of, I guess, not necessarily Watkins, but some of the other players that you might have had in your game week one side who unexpectedly proved to be season keepers all the way through. Those are kind of the guys that really brought people up the ranks and meant that, you know, those who got up the ranks and then didn't go against the house really, really benefited from that. Dallas is definitely another one. Not to focus too much on Leeds players, you could throw Son into this too. It has very much been not so much pontiferous and more punches pilot.
God.
It's just like it came to me. I was like, I'll throw it in and just kill Tom.
That's a killer, isn't it? I mean, there's so many issues with continuing that metaphor. I'm going to move on to the next question, which is hope in vain. So Tom.
Oh, you've nailed that segue.
So Tom, TCW onto Arsenal, says he's 300k and either his only chance of him getting to top 100k, asking for a friend, he says, who wants the season to end. I mean, I'm 200k and I'm afraid, Tom, it's all over. I think your only hope is to captain a single-digit own player and hope they explode, which is almost definitely what I'm going to be doing next game week.
Well, he's an Arsenal fan. That's Aubameyang, isn't it?
Yeah, I think maybe that's something that I've obviously propagated so far on this podcast. I mean, I think, mate, Anthony, rather than kind of asking you, you know, what should he do, I think maybe a more interesting question would be, when does your season become unsalvageable, do you think?
Unsalvageable. I think it becomes unsalvageable when your goal is more than the number of weeks left. If you divide that into the points that you are away from your, you know, optimal rank, if the answer there is more than 20, so if you need to gain more than 20 points per game week to get to the rank that you seek, I feel like at that point things are out of reach. That was certainly something that I felt once I, with two game weeks to go, had about 40 points off the top 10k. I was like, that's it, it's not happening. And so it has certainly proven. So that's how I would answer that particular question, Tom.
I think there's always a couple of occasions for a season where you're kind of like, oh, no, I could have done that and it didn't really happen. Be it captaincy, be it, you know, one of those things that, you know, the top 10K were doing. And it's always a bit annoying. I think that kind of past game week 30, things start to become very kind of solidified. Like, it starts to be kind of, you can't really kind of move yourself too far on beyond making ridiculous captain punts. Although, you know, this year, what I've done is I've tried to kind of make those captain punts. So go for stupid captains, well, not stupid captains, but the non-obvious captain every single week for a while, and make kind of, pontiferous moves. Whereas last year, what I did was I made really obvious captains and I kind of drew back from making punty moves, and it didn't, neither have really worked out. Whereas if I had done kind of straightforward captains this year, it would have been great. Maybe it's about some sort of like, you know, integrative sort of idea where next year I do the obvious captain, but I take punts with the moves in, because, you know, things like buying in Willock have done very, very well. Things like buying in Benteke have done very well. And obviously, you know, I've been lucky with the likes of, you know, Mitchell doing okay, and the TAA showing up the couple of times I have captained him.
The only one of those that was like a real, real, real differential pick was the Willock one, though. So Benteke made sense in the context of a double game week, and then you weren't going to look a gift horse in the mouth and sell him. Mitchell made sense because he was just a budget enabler that happened to work out. And of course, it's great when that thing works out for you. But at the same time, I think you're being harsh on yourself to call that, you know, too punty as well. Like, that was team structure and fixture dependent transfers that just happened to go your way, that you had at least some reason to expect they go your way. Now, yes, Christian Benteke suddenly finding the form that he hasn't had in, you know, half a decade.
No way. It's a bit
it's surprising. Like, you know, there was a time when 4 goals in 4 games from Christian Benteke wouldn't have been surprising, but that was years ago at this point. And so for you to find that was obviously surprising. But at the same time, Palace did have good fixtures and you took the risk. Where others went for Ebrezzi or indeed Wilfred Zaha, you went for Benteke because that just fitted your team structure and it worked out.
Yeah, it maybe became a bit jammy. But the reality, I suppose, of Game Week 38 is sometimes you do have these sort of romantic sort of picks as well there. I've seen those people obviously kind of getting Canigueiro in for a last dance. And obviously there have been a lot of kind of questions for Pep. Would you play him in the Champions League final? And Pep's been saying, no, it's a cold selection sort of thing. But could the final game for Man City at home to Everton be a different sort of case? So FPL Duck asks if Canigueiro in Game Week 38 is a must, Anthony. And maybe this is probably worth talking about kind of romantic picks, because I think that's probably fairly proximal here, isn't it?
Yeah, so I guess to answer Duck's question, first of all, just if you look around right now, there's serious doubts about Aguero's fitness. And so much as you'd love to see him play in that game and, let's say, start and be given a chance and, you know, have a good shot at scoring a goal or two, that feels like it's remote, that chance at this point. Like, we'll see. I'd love to find that Guardiola gives him a clean bill of health in his press conference ahead of that game. But it just doesn't seem likely based on the media reports as it stands when we're recording. That said, yeah, emotional type transfers to bring in for Game Week 38 are good. I actually brought in John Terry and nearly captained him for the wonderful 26-minute goodbye that he had with Chelsea a few years ago. I thank goodness I didn't captain him at the time. But of course, that was the shenanigans that he went on with. And that sort of emotional transfer, I'm not sure if it's even something that necessarily will pay off for you. Like, I think that Crystal Palace will be more motivated because Roy Hodgson is leaving them? No, but, you know, Crystal Palace's form hasn't been bad, and some sort of rehash of Chris Stamboul would be pretty hilarious to throw Liverpool suddenly out of the Champions League again. I find it very hard to get excited by those emotional transfers. I would have given, and I would like to give, Aguero a testimonial in my own FPL team, but that would have been as much based on the fact that I would have thought he'd do well if given a chance and had, you know, let's say with 60 minutes to play. But that just doesn't look like it's likely.
Yeah, no, I'm saying I think if there was some sort of, you know, a statistical angle to bring in Aguero, I'd probably be doing that. Okay, obviously I said earlier on that Aubameyang is worth bringing in. The problem is that it sounds like he's got a bit of a problem at the moment as well, which is why he's not in the squad. And you can imagine Pep is not quite doing it. This last week, I think that him and Bielsa are the two managers who are not going to be kind of bowing to John Terry-esque sort of sentiment to bring a player in like that. I just remember David Silva last year. I mean, last year, obviously, we mentioned earlier on, Man City beat Norwich 5-0. David Silva had zero returns. They tried everything to get that guy to score, like literally everything. It was all free kicks, like he was like, they were trying to play him through, like, throughout the course of the game. It just didn't happen. And a couple of other things I remember, Eden Hazard in 18-19 as a substitute for Chelsea, maybe a little bit of a pet thing. I'm not sure he'd quite do that with Aguero. I'm sure he's going to play the game against Everton, or at least kind of play some kind of time in the game.
Do you think like an injured Aguero could be given just a 1 minute like walk on?
Yeah,
at the end?
I'm sure he's going to be given something, isn't he? Because they're home.
If he's fit, if he's even able, yeah.
He's lifting the title. He's lifting the trophy, isn't he? As well in that game, according to the news.
What about Phil Jagielka, the man with the biggest FPL history that we have left, isn't it?
He is, but no.
Juan Mata.
I can't imagine there's that many romantic picks out there, are there? There's not many people leaving this year, which is quite big. I mean, there's no Solomon Rondon, who got a 90th minute goal in his final game for Newcastle in 18-19. There's none of those players who are going to be kind of gone for good after all this.
Jagielka could be such a meme pick. That's actually...
that one really... 15 points from Big Phil. So there are not that many of those. But I guess kind of outside of this, normality may return soon. FPL Wenger asks, you know, what changes do we need to incorporate in managing our FPL team as well as our mentality for the upcoming season, given that the game maybe returns some sense of normality? You know, maybe one game per week, there's going to be the crowds returning, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's going to be interesting, isn't it? It'll be a bit of a tough gig to kind of, again, readjust back to normality. We'll see how the dust settles, but I think that, you know, it's not been too bad. I think that BT still said they're going to retain that sort of Saturday night football thing going forward, to much to the chagrin of fan groups. So they're going to be phased games throughout the game week. It's that's still going to remain. The return of those crowds should be great. And I think that home and away, I think that home advantage is still going to be kind of lent into to some extent. And viewer said that earlier as well, that he's expecting to see sense of humanity from an analyst side of things too. What do you think, Anthony, in terms of, you know, the return to normality? Is there going to be anything that we should change as FPL managers?
I think, and I guess this is something that more comments on what we see on FPL Twitter more than anything. I do think of all things that returning to normality will give us is a chance to maybe incorporate a slightly healthier relationship with the game as a community into things. Just things got a little, I think the way that everything has been so drawn out in terms of the game weeks, but yet at the same time, the game weeks have been so relentless. It's kind of meant that it's been easy to be more fatigued by the FPL season or the frustrations of the season. You know, if you had a bad captaincy blank, you might've been watching that game week for four more or five more days after that, for example. That's not something that we're going to have next season. Even if, you know, we do have kind of slightly spaced out fixtures still, we're not going to have that. We won't have that relentlessness as well. You'll kind of have a 3 or 4 day period to be able to forget about it and then come back to it again. And so it's those sort of things that really stand out to me when I look at this. Yes, statistically, you might expect home advantage to come into things again. And yes, you'd expect the crowd to come into it. And I suspect we're going to see some sort of alteration to handball rules and how VAR is implemented and all the rest of it, which could affect how FPL scores come about. But at the same time, we don't know a huge amount about how that's going to play out yet until we have a bit of data to look at. And so I'd be getting into the real hypothetical zone to get into that too much.
I think you're right. Like, I think that, like, being able to think about FPL as being a game, I put a thread on Twitter a little while ago, and I think it's about the fact that because we've all been indoors and all kind of just kind of become a bit virtual as a kind of being, I think that, like, FPL, your kind of account of every now and again has become a bit more kind of bigger than how you are. And I think being able to see it just kind of an instantial part of your life rather than some just kind of integral to who you are is going to be really, really interesting. Because I think hopefully next year we're all going to chill out. We're all going to be able to sit back and it's going to be like, yeah, you know, this is how things have gone. But it is just FPL. I'm hoping that is definitely true. The return of the crowd should be great. As I said last week, when we reflect on the FA Cup final, it was really good to see kind of normality. And this game week as well, just kind of watching the games from a nicer point of view. That sense of normality from kind of seeing the fans kind of enjoying themselves, watching the games. And I think the West Brom versus West Ham, I just watched. And you know, West Brom, especially, they're going to be thinking to themselves, God, if the fans were here the whole time, things would have been very, very different. So next year, it may be really interesting to see what happens when we kind of learnt from this kind of sterile football that we've seen without any fans in the stadium. It's all been kind of fan sort of, it's all been played through the mic system to what it is now. I think that's going to be a really interesting sort of reversion back to the mean. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, Tom, the next question is more one for you, and it's shots on the meetup. FPL Jack is asking how many shots that you'll be having on the 24th of July, perhaps with a few friends.
Well, I'm not going to be taking many shots because I need to be there from 3 p.m. till late so people come and go. I guess this kind of gets into the FPL meetup in London this year. It'll be on 24th of July in collaboration with Planet FPL and Surgery at the Editor's Tap in Fessor Lane, which is by the Sister Thames Link. I met up with Surgery and Planet yesterday to get a venue finalised for this year's meetup. Yes, it's just in the pub, but it will no doubt be a great event that we can, we try to do it every summer, basically. And the idea is that we have it all day for 3 p.m, as I said earlier, to late. So people come and go. And it's, you know, very central as well. So literally, I think it's a nice alternative for those who can't make or don't want to make Fest. It's an event with soul. It's definitely worth showing up. You know, even if you're not one of these people who comes with other people and knows everybody in the community, or you're kind of just a listener who's outside of social media, everyone's so open, everyone's so friendly. Everyone will welcome you to the event. Now, Anthony, are you going to try to make your way? I don't know, it's obviously a bit different, isn't it, these days?
Yeah, I'd love to, but just it seems like the vaccine situation here, like we're the EU in general is catching up on the US and the UK pretty rapidly, actually. And it looks like we'll probably finish the job before you two nations. But at the same time, it probably looks like it's going to be a little bit too close for me, unfortunately, much as I'd love to be at it, which is the way things are. Anyway, we have a question coming in from someone else. I don't know who this guy is. Some Nick Harris guy. He wrote in on WhatsApp to ask who are the top picks for captaincy this week. And I guess this brings us in quite nicely to our transfers and captains as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the sensible pick is always going to be Salah, isn't it, Anthony, against Crystal Palace?
Yep.
Sensible punt, of course, Liverpool player who isn't Salah. And then the big punt is somebody outside of that. So, I mean, I'm looking to move on to my own transfers and captains. Looking at Dominic Calvert-Lewin to Firmino could be my captain as well. Genuinely, it's so open, isn't it? It really is. I think it's going to go down to the wire. I'm not going to be giving an endorsement on this podcast for who I'm going to be captaining, except to say it's probably not going to be Salah, given my OR. What about you?
I think I am going to go for Salah just to do some damage limitation. I kind of feel like I just want to hold my like 30-ish K rank at this point and move forward from there. I would be tempted in a kind of a parallel universe to go outside that and captain someone else, but I just don't think I want to. Then in terms of transfers, I have both Son and Kane in my side, and I don't want to have both of them playing Leicester in a game that Leicester have to win if they want to have any chance of securing Champions League football. So I suspect it's Son who will move on. I don't even know who I'm going to get in, and there's a bit of a punt potential in there. Either a City midfielder.
Aubameyang, is it?
If I had a massive budget, I'd be able to consider it, but Aubameyang, thankfully, is possibly just a little bit too far away in terms of affordability.
Nick Pepe, so, bye.
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem. Or Martinelli, indeed. Look, there are some good options there. I could even go for some kind of random other lower-priced Liverpool midfielder, but that kind of feels like something kind of silly to do. So with that in mind, I would say the likeliest option is that I go for someone like Ferran Torres or Phil Foden or something, and just hope, you know, hope that we get some sort of information on Sunday to allow me to do that. Price wouldn't be a problem. I might be tempted by Marcus Rashford if Ole gives some sort of indication that he'll be playing. Even in a weakened United team, I'd like to have him, because that weakened United team has quite a few flared players that you'd expect will set up chances, whilst United might not necessarily be that good defensively or kind of in terms of midfield solidity. An Arsenal player will be tempting as well, but Arsenal are just so all over the place that I'm not sure if I could actually double down on it in the end. So that's where I'm at with that, Tom.
I don't blame you there at all. I think it's one of those things where, like, as earlier on, it's all the lottery, it's all lucky dip. And you could be Bang or Bamiyang, and it's going to be someone random. It's going to be, like, you know, the Martin Noble. It's going to be, you know,
Phil Jagielka.
Phil Jagielka against Burnley, who blow up and do everything. Fabio Silva, because my nicest, who scores a hat trick.
So, Ollie Burke.
Ollie Burke's been terrible this year.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's probably it now, me, for this penultimate pod.
Yes, yes, indeed. Thanks so much for listening, guys. We were Who Got the Assist. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already and want to listen to us in our end of season pod and indeed into next season and through the summer. The correspondence will return, but not in the pod that's going to come in the next week or so to review the season. So basically, if you want to get it in, whogottheassist@gmail.com. But as I said, I would suggest you write it while you're having a nice summer barbecue and just want to have a few minutes of peace while you're doing that.
Cool. Yep. Thanks for listening. Back one evening next week, I think, Anthony. I'm not too sure. We've decided yet. We need to try to kind of get Nick involved, obviously, to put a bottom on the season with an end of season awards podcast for awards for all sorts of different things that have happened during the course of the season. Enjoy the final day. Speak very, very soon.
Bye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.